Louis Erickson has agreed to a 6-year deal with Vancouver Canucks.
First time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Center ice, right?
What did he score?
Baby!
Oh, and Skip has Poop J.
My contract sucks.
Dustin Bufflin's had a heck of a series, and Chicago in total control.
Yeah, this is all over. You can order the autopsy
with the
now.
Selection, Vancouver select from the London Knights, OAU Levy.
Good short.
All right.
I mean,
hello everybody, welcome to I Hate This Team, a podcast about our love for the Vancouver Canucks. I am a host, Aaron Warner. With me as always is Stefan Heck.
Hello,
Stefan. What is up,
man?
What a
I mean
week.
we recorded our, this is our second episode ever.
Yep.
Our first episode, I think people liked it. We got a good response. Thank you, everyone, mm-hmm. for listening.
Thank you, everyone, in Finland. Made us number 2 on their hockey charts.
Big hit in Finland. I think number 8 in Canada on the hockey charts.
I think that's the highest we saw on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts.
Pretty cool. So thank you, everyone. Make sure to rate and review us. 5 stars. We'd appreciate that. But
please.
We recorded after their first 2 games of the season. And they looked very bad.
Yeah, 0-2 blew a... Two goal leads.
Yeah. And we were thinking, well, one was a 3-goal lead, the one against Edmonton.
Oh, right. Yes, of course. Two multi goal leads.
So we were sort of thinking, well, I mean, this is some classic Canuck shit, but I mean, they'll probably scrape a couple wins out of the last few games of the road trip.
We kept prefacing everything with it's only two games.
It's only 2 games. You know, they'll come back, you know, at like 2-3 or something, which, you know, 5-game road trip to start the season, whatever, 2-3, that's not horrible. And they'll come back for the home opener against Buffalo. They'll be raring and ready to go. And they are 0-4-2. They mm-hmm. have not won a game this year. They look like total dog shit.
They broke an NHL record for, it was both multi-goal leads blown to start a season.
Yeah.
And then just multi-goal leads blown, period.
In a row, I think.
In
right?
a row.
Yeah.
So
very, I mean, that's classic Canucks. They are always breaking records, just not the ones you would want them to break as a supporter. Again, they look absolutely horrible. And last night was, I mean, it was incredible. I will say I did have a very fun time last night watching that game because I think we both agreed that the classic Canucks thing to do, coming back from a winless 5-game road trip, it's your home opener. The classic Canucks thing to do would have been to win like 3-2 in the shootout while mm-hmm. playing pretty badly throughout the game, maybe not deserving to win, but they wanted a shootout. So, you know, fans go home happy. We can sort of like paper over and ignore some of the problems.
Yeah, stay the course, you know?
Yeah, but no, they had a meltdown for the ages and lost 5-1 to the Buffalo Sabres. And I mean, they had some moments.
They had a pretty good second period.
Yeah, the Pettersson, Podkolzin, Kuzmenko line is a lot of fun, and of course they've split that up in practice today, which is great. That line looked good, I thought. Jack Rathbone, I think his underlying stats were not great, but he looked good on the power play, I thought.
Move the puck. It was very like noticeable, especially in the first period.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is another guy that's not Quinn Hughes that can actually do something.
Oh, and Quinn Hughes is not playing, by the way.
Yeah.
And you know, we can't ignore that. That obviously makes a huge difference because their back end is absolutely atrocious.
It's so bad, man. Fucking Oliver Ekman-Larsson looks like
he's done.
Edler's last season.
Yeah, man, he's done. Myers is still Tyler Myers, whatever, but like it is, yeah. So they lost 5-1. I think I heard mixed reports it was either 4 jerseys thrown on the ice or 5 jerseys thrown on the ice. A lot of beer was thrown on the ice. Which that's a good thing. I'm glad people mm-hmm. are doing that. There was a lot of booing. JT Miller was getting booed when he had the puck, which again, I think that's good. He got into it with Luke Shen after a bad giveaway in the second period, and Connor Garland had to step in and split them up.
Did you catch the player introductions?
No, I missed that. So what Elliot Friedman said was that the players looked like they were worried about getting booed.
Oh, yeah, they didn't look happy. And I thought the funniest thing off the bat is they started announcing like the players that weren't around.
Right.
For the, you know, and it was complete crickets when they were saying Tucker Poolman.
Yeah, Trev. Just nothing.
And there's a handful of applause for Quinn Hughes. And then it seemed pretty quiet as the players skated. The really strange thing was watching the coaching staff.
Yeah.
And seeing how the coaching staff looked incredibly fucking nervous that they were going to get booed before the game started.
I think Boudreaux still has some goodwill from last season. And also, he seems like such a nice old man. I don't want to be mad at Bruce Boudreaux, you know?
Yeah, like, and how much of it can you really pin what have they given him? Boudreaux, right? Like, special teams haven't been good. That is technically his fault. But they're doing the exact same stuff they did last year playing for Travis Green. So at what point is it not the coach's fault and it's the personnel?
It's been the personnel for so long. They just have no one on the back end other than Quinn Hughes who can move the puck up. So you could have the best forward group in the NHL. And if you don't have people who can get the puck to them, what's the point, right? Like, you have no one on the back end other than Hughes and maybe Rathbone who can fucking make a pass. Like, there were multiple times in yesterday's game against the Sabres where Tyler Myers was like trying to hold it at the blue line and like pass it across. And like, he just couldn't do it. OEL had multiple giveaways for goals. Like, it's just OEL. I realized this the other day. By the time his contract is up, I think I'm going to be 40.
Isn't that 38?
Are there 7 years left on his contract?
I think this is the seventh year.
Okay,
so there's six additional years after.
Okay,
this
I'll be 39 then. Okay, that's totally fine then. That's fine. JT Miller though, I think
JT Miller.
I'll be 40 when that contract is up. So that's really pleasant to think about. So I will say this. I think the fans did a very good job. Mm-hmm. They did
Shout
what they
out.
Were supposed to do. Great work, everyone who was at the game. They booed Sweet Caroline, which is wonderful. The
That's
Canucks
awesome.
In-game experience,
that made me very
by the
proud.
Way. Oh, the Canucks in-game experience is maybe the worst in the entire NHL. Now, I have not been to every NHL arena. I can't say this for sure. I'm going off what I know about the Canucks and their in-game experience. It is really bad. And I know, you know, it's for families. It's for families with kids on like a night out or whatever. Kids don't fucking care about Neil Diamond. Like, what are we doing here? It's just play like Metallica. Just play like metal. Play like punk. Just play like music. This is a whole other thing. This could be an entire episode. But the Canucks in-game experience is total shit, obviously. And I am very proud of the fans who threw their jerseys on the ice. Throwing the beer on the ice, I feel like at this point, essentially, that's like the same cost as throwing a jersey on the ice, given the prices that have been raised at Rogers Arena. So that's good as well. What I would like people to do, and I tweeted this out, and this is sort of a call to action to any listeners who are going to Canucks games in the near future. What I would love to see you do is I need you to bring a sign to the game. And maybe in like pencil or something, just write like "Go Canucks, go" or some generic positive message on the sign, and smuggle in like a magic marker. And at some point in the game, you need to write "Sell the team" in huge block letters on both sides of the sign, and then throw the sign on the ice. Because the visual of someone like picking that up off the ice at a Canucks home game, and you can see it say "Sell the team." I mean, people are going to talk about that. They're talking about the jerseys. Mm-hmm. You can't ignore five jerseys being thrown on the ice or whatever number it was. But that really, to me, is the next step. That and billboard and the banner behind a plane.
Who
which
would
hopefully
buy the team?
Aquilini. I mean, there's definitely a lot of like rich assholes in Vancouver. People are saying Jim Pattison, but he's like 95 years old.
Yeah,
so I don't think it would
there's
be
the Lululemon dick.
Yeah, Chip Wilson maybe, who's like, I mean, any billionaire who's buying the team is going to be evil just because they are a billionaire. But ideally what you need is someone who is going to buy the team and then let someone else run it. Right. That's the key.
Yeah.
Like whoever owns the team is going to be evil because they are a team owner. But I don't care how evil they are if they just let people do their jobs. Right.
Yeah.
That's the main
because I made this point briefly last week, but it's been something I've been thinking about really since the not trade deadline, since free agency started, is current management is just competent Jim Benning. They're Jim Benning without saying, oh, I think we'll try and sign PK Subban next year, and getting like caught for tampering when he doesn't need to. And like, they actually sound eloquent when they're talking to the public and stuff.
Yeah, I'd say they're Jim Benning if he went to like 2 years of community college.
And I do have respect for Jim Rutherford. And that's what kind of makes us hurt even more.
Yeah.
Is they hired this president of hockey ops, and you're like, oh, this is a Hall of Famer, has won 3 cups, obviously is a competent hockey mind. And he seemed to fill the front office with pretty smart hockey people.
Yeah, lots of voices.
And then they just did exactly what Jim Benning would do, but just with a bit more efficiency. Be it like re-signing Miller, be it like giving Middlesex forwards $4 or $5 million for multiple years, in the case of like Mikheyev, or probably the most Jim Benning move of all is trading the second round pick along with Jason Dickinson,
who's doing really well in Chicago.
Who's outscored? I believe he's outscored JT Miller, or they have the same amount of points.
He scored again today
in half as many games. Yeah, he got the game winner.
Yeah. I mean, it is the same old shit, in a slightly nicer package. And at least it is so far. I mean, we'll see. The Rutherford after hour stuff yesterday, I thought was interesting. People were kind of freaking out about his comments about the rebuild. But the thing that intrigued me was that he did specifically say, we may, and I've got this in front of me here, we may very well be in a rebuild in the direction we're going.
Yes.
Now, he did use some buzzwords that, any fan of the Canucks should be terrified of, you know, transitioning the team on the fly. We want to add younger play. Like, there's some stuff that I'm a little worried about, but he did literally specifically say word for word, we may very well be in a rebuild in the direction we're going. So I feel like I think he's a smart enough guy. The issue, as always, is like, will Aquilini ever allow a rebuild?
And I think they're smarter hockey people that are being forced by Aquilini to do Jim Benning moves. So they're just doing a slightly better job of it because they are competent hockey people.
Yeah.
This is something I've been thinking about all week that I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Is on that note, if we are in a rebuild right now, two hypotheticals.
Which, by the way, good start to the rebuild, trading a second round pick.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine, for a second, the Canucks didn't do the OEL trade.
Oh, Aaron, I imagine that every second.
They gave up a first round pick for temporary cap relief, but got, we had, as we were saying, another 6 years of OEL and Connor Garland, who's okay.
Yeah.
But if you're ever to get rid of that OEL contract, you're either one, buying him out, or two, you're going to be attaching assets and probably retaining some of his cap hit just to unload him on another team, which skewers us.
I do think in terms of worst trades in Canucks franchise history, in terms of like long-term damage, I think that might be worse than the Cam Neely deal.
Yeah. Like
Cam
obviously,
Neely obviously was like incredible and would have been great to have for like the 94 cup run, whatever. But like, I mean, this deal is just going to have so many repercussions, and
better part of the next decade.
Yeah.
And then along with that as well, imagine they just didn't re-sign Miller.
Oh my God.
Imagine how much like more positive this conversation could be, and like how much more hope that we would have.
What
for
if
it?
They had taken the Rangers offer, right?
Oh my God. Like, would maybe this is short-sighted because he's on a downturn or whatever, but like, would you trade him for just future considerations if we could just be rid of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because essentially that's the same thing as just walking away for nothing, which is better than signing him for 8 years. And again, we could have total egg on our faces a week from now. You know, he could have a hat trick next game against Carolina, knowing how the Canucks work. I don't think he is as bad as he is playing right now, but
no,
man,
he's not.
He looks so bad right now. And just like
I would have said,
attitude,
I would have guessed like a 70 like, point season before the season started. Because so many of his points last year were like secondary assists on the power play, which who knows if that's replicable or not. But yeah, like maybe you could trade him while retaining some of that salary, just to be, just like the space that they'd have to maneuver around without that.
Yeah.
Would be such a breath of fresh air right now.
It's just so tough because, I mean, I think players like Horvat and Garland have value. Horvat's obviously a UFA at the end of the year. And Garland is on a good contract, I would say. But players like Brock Besser has like negative value right now. Like, yeah, I know he's probably playing hurt still or whatever, but he does not look good. And you're not getting anything good for Brock Besser.
At least he's only signed for two more. Remember all the talk before the season started about how this is the year that Besser scores three goals.
Three goals would be nice.
Yeah. He's been completely fucking invisible.
Yeah. I do think he probably is still hurt. Probably. You know, he got like the hand surgery or whatever at the start of the year. So things are not looking good. Last night was as a Canucks fan who obviously wants to see them rebuild, who wants to see them get a high pick in this year's draft, which is incredibly stacked, it was nice to see. It would be fun. I mean, we discussed this, like, going into this year. I don't want to say I was excited for this year, but I was sort of looking forward to, like, watching them and cheering for them and being happy when they won. And six games in, it's completely gone. It's completely off the rails. We're back to cheering for them to lose. We're back to doing the draft lottery simulator on Tankathon. And it's just the same thing over and over again. And that's why it's so funny when Rutherford says something like, oh, I don't want to make a panic deal based off these first six games. How about making a panic deal based off the last fucking 9 years? That's not a panic deal. That's a reasonable deal to make. Yeah, so I sort of praised Rutherford earlier about saying, hey, we might be in a rebuild, which was maybe the most refreshingly honest thing Canucks GM has said in the last decade. But he did also say, I mean, and this is, as a Canucks fan, this is so fucking annoying to hear. Oh, I don't think people realize how long rebuilds take. Yeah.
Is it? Well, I do. Yeah. I do. This is... Something I've been thinking about all week and kind of roughly researching. So I looked at the 2016, the 2017, and the 2018 draft.
Yeah.
Where the Canucks were near the bottom of the league and were drafting in the top. Well, they kept losing the lottery. So it was like top five picks.
Yeah.
And then top seven in 2018. So 2016 draft. That was the draft where Toronto was in the bottom of the league and they got Austin Matthews.
And the Canucks were, I think, one ping pong ball away from winning that lottery.
Yeah.
Who did they pick that year, Aaron?
That was the Olli Juolevi year.
Oh, okay.
So how's he
doing for the Canucks?
Here are the other teams around that. So Winnipeg, they drafted Lane, second overall. Winnipeg the next year went on to lose to Vegas in the conference finals. And then multiple playoff appearances after that until last year where they missed. Columbus, Pierre-Luc Dubois. Not saying that they're in a great spot necessarily, but probably better where the Canucks were.
But they had first round picks last year. Like, they're at least like stockpiling stuff, right?
Yeah, and they got to beat Tampa.
Yeah, and they traded Seth Jones. They sold high on Seth Jones, right? Yep. So they've made smart moves.
Kent Johnson looks good.
He looks very good. Yeah,
the Edmonton Oilers.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was
now having Connor McDavid obviously does help a rebuild speed up a little bit. But
they were also dog shit for a really long time and are like reaping the benefits of that now with Draisaitl and McDavid.
Yeah.
And anyways, the Canucks with Olli Juolevi. And then Calgary drafted Matthew Tkachuk. They're looking pretty good this season.
Yeah, they're looking okay, I would say.
Trading Matthew Tkachuk looks like it's going to work out well for the...
For both teams, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, here's the one kind of exception. Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
They're in a category of their own.
Yeah.
Buffalo Sabres.
I mean, granted, beating the Canucks is not like an impressive feat and really never has been, but they looked really good last night.
Yeah.
And I know they beat Calgary, they beat Edmonton. Like, they look very, very good. Having Dahlin and Power,
Calgary Buffalo game.
Yeah.
And I watched a little bit of Edmonton Buffalo, and I thought they looked like worse against Vancouver than they did in those two games.
Yeah.
Tage Thompson is really fucking good.
He's so big and so fast. Like I don't, and Alex Tuch, and I mean, yeah, Darlene and Power back there just for the next so like 15 years. That. Like, holy shit, you're just set.
And Samuelson's his name, right? The guy that's playing with Darlene that hurt his leg.
Yeah.
He looks good too.
He looks good too. Everyone looks good. I mean, it's early. It's early, right? We need to preface everything we're saying with it's early. But man, Buffalo
looked good late last season as well. I was kind of bullish going in for them, like going into this year with them. I drafted Eric Comrie in a couple of fantasy
leagues. I've got Eric Comrie in my keeper league. I paid $35 for him in the auction draft, and that's looking like the correct decision so far. Although again, I am trying to tank this year away. I was actually I pitched this question to the guys in the league last night. And that question is, who's going to make the playoffs first? Me in my fantasy keeper league or the Canucks in the NHL? And it's a tough question because, I mean, you don't know a lot about my league, but it's very, very tough to make the playoffs in our league. It's a 14 team league, and I believe six teams make the playoffs.
Oh yeah, that is rough.
So it's very tough to make the playoffs in our league. It's much easier to make the playoffs or just accidentally stumble into like a wild card spot in the NHL. But you know, not that I'm saying I'm a fucking great fantasy GM or anything, but I am committed to a full rebuild. I'm trading for draft picks. I mean, it was so funny. I tweeted this out yesterday, but hearing Rutherford, to go back to his after hours interview, hearing him say, hey, it's not fantasy hockey. Yeah, I fucking know it's not, because I'm able to trade for draft picks in my fantasy keeper league. And apparently, like, I want more than anything, and they're never going to do this, obviously, but I really want more than anything for the Canucks to go back to having like the season ticket holder summit where people can ask questions to the GM. Because, if someone could get us into one of those, and we just have questions prepared and ready to go. But I mean, the question I would ask is like, how come every other team in the fucking NHL can make trades for draft picks and you guys seem incapable of it? Like it's
how long did it take True Living to make that Tkachuk deal?
Oh, I just, anyway, it's so, it's so this is, look, if you're a fan of the Canucks, if you're not a fan of the Canucks, if you're a hockey fan, if you're a fan of just this podcast, and Aaron and I, this is great news for you. This is the perfect start. You could not have asked for a better start to the season.
Last week, I kept thinking, should we just record midweek? Because there's some, like, what if they pull it together and it's going to be a less exciting podcast?
Yeah.
But no, the Canucks.
No, they were very nice to us this week. They gave us the most, they gave us a lot of very good content, a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, it's just, did see one very good, I want to say there's one very good comment on The Athletic, Thomas Trance, friend of the show. I'm going to say that because he does follow
us. He followed us back.
And this is something that I'm also tired of too. This is the top comment from Robin B, who says, I gotta love being constantly told Canucks fans can't handle a rebuild as we endure year after year of losing as much as a rebuilding team without reaping any of the benefits. And I mean, that really just sums it up, right? Like we're losing as much as a team that is purposely tanking or purposely rebuilding is, but they're not getting any extra draft picks. They're not bringing in any extra prospects. There's as far as I can tell, no plan to the future. And it's just been like this for almost a decade now. And there's literally there is no end in sight. And that's the problem.
Yeah. So like, this is going to tie into what I'm saying with these drafts. 2017, New Jersey drafted first overall. Nico Hischier, pretty good player. New Jersey looks fun as hell this year.
They do. If they get goaltending,
I watched their game. Yeah, I watched their game yesterday against, granted, San Jose, but they are. Hey,
I've got
talented.
I don't know if I got my boy Dawson Mercer right here. I mean, he is. He looks very good. Jack Hughes is insane. Obviously, their defense is going to be just disgusting when
Jasper
Luke Hughes
Brad
joins the
is
team.
Super dynamic.
Oh, I mean, they're a very fun team.
Then you had Philly drafting Nolan Patrick, which that's another bad one. Philly looks really bad as well because they do the same shit that Vancouver does.
Philly is trying to win and make the playoffs this year. And they've started out, I think,
actually
pretty well.
They're 4-1, aren't they?
Yeah. But
yeah, they beat Preds yesterday.
There's no way that's going to last.
No.
And all they're doing is shooting themselves in the foot and not getting the high pick that they should get this year.
Then Dallas drafted Miro Heiskanen. Dallas, pretty good team. Cup. made it to the Cup Finals. Heiskanen looks about it.
Insanely good, especially this year early on as well. And then it was Makar next, right?
Then it was Makar, so we all know what happened with Colorado. Then yeah. Canucks drafted Pettersson.
Great pick.
Vegas drafts Cody Glass. Yeah. Vegas, pretty good team. New York Rangers, pretty good team.
Wasn't Glass traded for Patrick as well?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, and Patrick, I think, is probably going to retire because he's had a lot of injury issues.
Yeah, yeah, he's been plagued with injuries, which sucks. And then Cody Glass has just not looked good.
He'll be like a third liner kind of thing, it looks like. But
maybe if he like sixth in the NHL. Then Buffalo again, Detroit, Florida.
Yeah.
All teams I would rather be cheering for than Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, that's a long list of teams.
Buffalo, Rasmus Dahlin.
Oh, he looks so good. Oh my God.
The Canes with Svechnikov.
Also looks very good.
Yep. Then Montreal. Montreal did have that interesting pick.
Yeah.
Ottawa, much rather cheer for them.
Yeah.
Yep. Arizona Coyotes.
This pick still makes just absolutely no sense to me. The Barrett Hayden pick. I still to this day do not understand that pick at all.
Detroit with Zadina.
Which, look, they obviously should have taken Hughes, but I do get the logic of taking like a faller like Zadina, who looked very good in his draft year, and I think will still be a good NHL player.
Yeah,
but,
for sure. He's just no Quinn Hughes.
Quinn Hughes at 7 is just like insane value. Obviously, he hasn't had like the best start to the year, but he's playing either sick or injured and is playing fucking 28 minutes a game. So there's only so much you can ask of him when he's the only guy on the blue line, right?
Yeah. And then Chicago, where like they're fucking awful, but they want to be.
Yeah, they clearly have a plan.
Yeah, Rangers again look great. Edmonton, conference finalists, still looking pretty good. And then two Islanders, where they also made the the conference final 2 years in a row, so not bad. They at least got some joy in the playoffs. But my point is that the league is set up so that if you are bad, it doesn't take too much time to be good again, because you can be good through the draft. But the Canucks just have refused to fucking do that. So now all the teams that were like truly bad when the Canucks were bottom feeders are competing and in the playoffs. There's
LA,
at least some
New
good.
York, Buffalo, Detroit, I think, is looking better. Anaheim looks like shit, but they have a ton of prospects coming up. So
yeah, no, Anaheim will be very good eventually.
Yeah.
The Canucks are just middling at best.
Yeah, I think you told me that Drance raised basically that exact point, that the NHL is designed in such a way that it's really hard to be this bad for this long. Like, you have to basically try. You have to go out of your way to be this bad for this long. And that's essentially what the Canucks have done. They have shot themselves in the foot time and time again. They have never committed to a proper rebuild. That's why it was so funny. I got a reply this week, and I didn't interact with the guy because I was like, there's no point, right? There's no point in talking to someone who still believes this. I said, I think Rick Dhaliwal said, no wins on a 5-game road trip, horrible start to the season. Where is your frustration level at? And I said, you're either completely checked out or you find it hilarious. Frustration went out the window with this team like 6 years ago, which I think is 100% true. Mm-hmm. If you're frustrated with this team, it's because you had expectations. Really, all you can do at this point is laugh. Like, that's all you can do to stay sane. Obviously, there is some level of frustration because it's like they keep making the same mistakes over and over again. When is this ever going to end? Why am I trapped in this hell? What did I do in a previous life to deserve this, et cetera, et cetera. But someone replied to me and said, why? Because we were rebuilding, drafted back-to-back-to-back Calder finalists and a Calder winner. Why were you getting frustrated during a rebuild? Frustration is now when we can't surround our team with the proper pieces on the back end. I agree. That's a reasonable reason to be frustrated.
It is a poorly constructed team.
It is.
You have defenders that can't move the puck whatsoever, and then you have forwards that can't defend.
It's awful. I mean, it's horribly constructed. It's just not a well-built team. But to still think in 2022 that the Canucks at any point ever committed to a proper rebuild is so insane to me. And to also put any measure to think at all that, oh, three Calder trophy nominees/winners in a row is like worth anything. Like Andrew Raycroft won a Calder Trophy, right? not trying to take anything away from Pettersson, who's still a very good player, but like that, I'm sorry. It, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that important. Drafting is obviously super important, but it's for me, it's quantity. Like you need to just get as many swings, as many throws at the dartboard as possible, and they have just never done that. So they've never committed to a rebuild in the last 10 years ever. Like that's the thing. So in 2022, to still believe that the Canucks ever properly tried to rebuild is so insane to me. And I will just, I'll never, I mean, I compared the guy to those like Japanese World War II holdouts who were like stuck on an island and still thought World War II was happening. That's essentially what's going on, man, with these guys, where they think Benning did a great job rebuilding and it's just bad luck at this point. You know?
So I was listening to the post-game call-in show on 650 last night.
Oh, how was that?
There was two incredibly funny things. The first one was this very confused woman called in, and it sounded like she was trying to make like five different points.
Okay.
But like basically saying you have to look at ownership, but you shouldn't be upset at the players because they're playing their best. And she said, are we fans or fanatics? Which I don't know what that was supposed to mean. But my favorite thing she said was, my son plays hockey and I would never go out there and boo him if he was losing.
Dude, I swear to God, someone on the Canucks subreddit started a thread with that exact same reasoning where it's like, I would never boo my child if he was bad at hockey.
These aren't your kids, bro.
Are you paying your fucking kids millions of dollars? Like, we're paying their salary by going, well, I'm not, because I'm not going to any fucking games or buying any merch or buying any food at the games or anything, but that's such a fucking insane comparison to draw. And
yeah.
It really explains, I mean, Harmon had a post yesterday where he said Canucks fans don't deserve this. And I partially agree with that. I think Canucks fans like you and I do not deserve this. There are a lot of Canucks fans, and I'm talking about the Canucks fans who sign up for a MasterCard at the game to get a free hat, and the Canucks fans who are still confusing the concepts of signing a free agent and trading for someone. Those Canucks fans, they deserve it. The Canucks fans who thought Jim Benning did a great job and still think Jim Benning did a great job, those Canucks fans deserve all of this, and I am happy it's happening to them. So there are silver linings to this cloud of a franchise, but it's just, yeah. So what else happened on the
other show? Very funny thing is, so it was Sat and I think Randeep, and they had the color guy on from the 650 broadcast.
Yeah.
It was like a former player, but I didn't recognize who it was. And they were asking him like, what's it like being in the dressing room when these things are going on? And he said that one team he was on, the captain was Adam Foote. And he says when they're losing, like you have to like get everybody together and like go out for a big dinner and hash out everything because you have cliques form and guys only like hang out in their little cliques and it just makes matters worse. And it cuts back and Randeep's like, so I don't know what you want to do with this team. Whether it's like, do they need to just go have dinner together? Is it something else? Like, yeah, bro, that's what's going to fix this. They have to go out to White Spot.
Yeah,
and get
the
pirate
big team
bags.
Dinner at the Keg that turned the season around for the Canucks. Oh, you know what we need? We need some Billy Miner pies. That'll fix everything. Oh my God, dude.
We got to go for wing night. That'll fix it.
Holy shit.
Which locker room drama gossip. Oh. There was a lot of it this week. It seems like it's a long time ago now, but Jason Dickinson obviously got traded to the Chicago Blackhawks. Hawks has been playing well.
Yep.
And then on a Chicago Blackhawks insider, recent former player, forget who it was. He was on with Frank Saravelli and they were talking
about
the
Canucks.
By the
way, Frank Saravelli is like younger than us. Isn't that so insane?
What?
Yeah, he just has prematurely gray hair. Well, he's younger than me for sure. Wait, how old are you, Aaron?
I'm 32.
I think he might be the same age as you.
What?
He just went gray.
He's the same
very
age
early,
as Bob McKenzie. Come on.
No, I'm fucking serious. Look it up.
He's 34.
Is he? Okay. I thought maybe he... Okay. So, but in any case, he's definitely younger than I...
He's five... He's 2 years older than Nazem Kadri. What the fuck?
But yeah. Anyways. The Blackhawks insider went on his show. And
yes.
It seems as though... I mean, the assumption is he got the inside information from Jason Dickinson.
Yeah.
You would assume.
Saying that the locker room is completely fractured and cliquey, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do some completely baseless speculation here.
Oh, that sounds great.
So, you know how Garland was a healthy scratch?
Yep.
Garland's apparently homies with JT Miller.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've read that in quite a few spots. I've also, I remember when JT was about to re-sign, after he re-signed, a lot of the messaging was he has a lot of good friendships in Vancouver, especially the other Americans on the team.
Yeah.
And we know from Connor Garland's
fades, Twitter likes.
Yeah. His Twitter likes. And
JT from JT Miller's hat.
And JT Miller's hat and fucking Browning tattoo. That I wonder if there's like a political divide in the team.
I legitimately would not be, because like Pedersen, we know, like worked to keep a refugee in Sweden when he was younger, right?
Like, right. Yeah. He brought his best friends over from Sweden. They're all like refugees, right?
Yeah. And I feel like Bo Horvat is probably like a Jonathan Toews sort of like liberal type of player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I would not be surprised if that was the case. But clearly, there's something going on in the locker room, which we're not privy to. But maybe we will be at some point. Did you see Miller in the post game interview yesterday talking to Daniel Wagner?
Oh, he said it was like none of your business, right?
Yeah, when Wagner asked him about the Luke Shen thing. Yeah,
which seems like a super nice guy as well.
He seems great. I love Luke Shen. I mean, he's wonderful. Luke Shen is great. I'm a big fan of Luke Shen.
He shouldn't be a number two defenseman. No, but
that's not his fault.
I got time for him.
Yeah. But yeah, man. I mean, it's just I don't want to say I didn't see this coming, but it's just like I cannot believe how bad it got so fast.
Yeah.
Like even for like they're doing a fucking awesome games done quick speed run of being a shitty team.
They've already had the players only meeting. They've already had leaks to the media that they're not thinking about making any coaching changes.
Yeah. I'm literally just picturing like a Twitch speedrunner being like, okay, so this is kind of a skip where I'm going to clip JT Miller through Luke Shen. And that's going to get the coach fired two games faster than he normally would be.
So a lot of that Jason Dickinson trade was to save ownership money this year.
Yes.
Do you think ownership wants to pay three different head coaches at the same time?
No. But I also think when you bring in someone like Mike Yeo, like he's there as hopefully he's there as like a tank commander, like a Willie Desjardins style tank commander.
That's what I'm thinking, man. You get rid of Boudreaux, you have Mike Yeo come in.
You don't have to like hire a new guy. Yeah. You have the guy there.
And then you just lose every game from here on out.
Yeah. Now
Bedard, baby.
I mean so the thing with this draft, and I've been sending you stuff about it and talking to a lot of people about it, because my focus on the draft, and I've mentioned this in the last episode, is my keeper league, where obviously I would love to pick Connor Bedard. But there are just so many. It's obviously a very forward heavy draft. Like there's one defenseman, I think Cameron Allen, who's maybe going to go in the top 10, but it's a forward heavy draft. But again, the Canucks need help everywhere. So whatever. But if there's any year to completely bottom out and finish dead last, and if you finish dead last this year, you are guaranteed either Connor Bedard, Matvei Michkov, or Adam Fantilli. Adam Fantilli is like absolutely shredding college hockey right now. Like he is shredding Jack Eichel's records. It's unbelievable. He looks so good. Connor Bedard, obviously, we don't need to say anything else about him. He looks absolutely insane. And Michkov, the issue there is that he signed in the KHL until like 2026. So who knows what happens there. But like this draft is so loaded. This is the year to bottom out. And I mean, maybe on some level, Rutherford and Alvin, like know that. And but like, so this is the point I wanted to bring up is Buffalo Sabres fan, friend of ours, Connor, sent me this DM last night. I don't know if he was at the game or just watching the game, but he's a big Sabres fan, and he raised a very good point where I was talking about, oh, I can't wait until they just like trade everyone and you know, sell high on whoever. And he raised a very interesting point, which I think is true. He said, with respect to selling everyone, the one thing about that is the best way to truly tank isn't to fill your team with scrubs. It's to continue to play a bunch of good players who don't give a shit. And I think that's like 100% accurate, because when you bring in like the scrub players, they're going to try very hard to like stay in the NHL, and you might get a
Buffalo
bunch of
Buffalo last year, right?
Yeah. You might get a bunch of like accidental wins, right? So you want to have, if you, as a fan, if you truly want your team to tank, you want to have good players who no longer give a shit. You want to have that toxic dressing room environment. So as it stands right now, the Canucks are in a perfect position to tank for Connor Bedard.
Yeah. So like, get what you can for Bo Horvat right now.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to get rid of JT Miller. So
I don't know.
You're not going to be able to get rid of Besser.
The trade idea I've seen, and I know we roasted people for making trade proposals in the first episode, but we're out of ideas two episodes in. So we're going to make some trade proposals here. But the idea I've seen bandied around a bunch is doing like a Miller trade for Jamie Benn, who I think has like 3 years left on his deal. And
Dallas probably wants to compete now. It's another year where it's cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there are players where, like, if you're making a Miller trade right now, obviously the hope is that he bounces back and plays up to his contract for at least like two years of the contract. But assuming he doesn't, I mean, just take that like pain pill right now, basically, and trade for another bad contract that's like slightly shorter. But it's going to be really tough to trade him. Besser, like I said, I think has negative value. Horvat, you could trade. Garland, you could trade. Demko, you could trade. And that's who I'd be thinking about trading. Although, you know, we talked about this with, John Cullen when you were on Blocked Party, last night. Goalies traditionally have much lower values.
I think you can still probably get a pretty good King's ransom for Thatcher Demko right now.
I would imagine you could too, but you know, who's to say? But anyway, I would look at trading him. Honestly, I think the only two players that are, and I don't want to say untouchable, I think you still make the deal if the offer's there, but Quinn Hughes and Pettersson. So you've got a number one center and you've got a number one D, and
then hopefully after, well, because like we were looking at drafts from what, 4 to 6 years ago, right? So let's say 5 years from now, like, they're still going to be young. They're going to be in that kind of Bo Horvat position.
Yeah.
And still very much contributing. I think Pete is a super smart player and will have
He's just had bad luck, bad bounces, seeing
how hard he's playing and trying.
And Kuzmenko looks good. Podkolzin looks good. Like, there are bright spots so far this year. But man, I mean, it's just, I don't know how much longer I can do this, but now that we're doing the fucking podcast, I have to keep doing this. I have to watch the team, you know?
Something I wanted to talk about today was, I think there is a big need to play JT Miller on the wing.
They're doing that at practice today.
Yeah, yeah. So they kind of beat me to it here today, but the Canucks need a true first line. And I think when you look at Pettersson, he's been generating a lot and there hasn't been enough finish on that line.
Yeah.
I was listening to Yannick Hansen earlier this week talking about how
he's so good, by the way. He's such a breath of fresh air. He just talks so much shit on this team. And I love it.
But he was saying, like, if you're playing with someone like Pettersson who can generate so much, you have to be able to like score on the first or second attempt when he sets you up, not on the third or fourth one. He said, like, Podkolzin blowing up with Pettersson is really all on Podkolzin. And he likened it to playing with the Sedins. Like, he knew if he played with the Sedins every game, he'd score at least 20 goals a year. But he also knew if Mikael Samuelsson or Alex Burrows played with the Sedins, they'd be scoring 35, 40. So he's like, it's a much better idea to play someone like that with them than me. I'll score, but not as much. And to that point, the Canucks, against everybody that they've matched up with so far this season, with I think the exception of Philadelphia, they haven't had nearly as good of a top line. They've spread the love between three lines, and just none of them are really getting it done, with the exception of whoever Pettersson's playing with, and then the pucks aren't really going into the net. So my thought would be reunite the Lotto line or switch out Besser for somebody else on that line. Who cares? But I think you need JT playing with Pettersson if you want to have any value out of this contract, because he's being paid like a top line player at $8 million a year.
Yeah.
He's not being played like a number one center, like people like, you know, Rutherford was saying in the offseason, Alvin was saying in the offseason. But first line winger on a really good top line, that's manageable at eight. You can get some value out of it.
Just get any value out of it, because he's clearly not good defensively. And really never has been. And you want to put him in a spot that he can succeed. So I agree. He still played a minute
more than Pettersson yesterday.
I know.
And like over a minute more at 5-on-5.
Pettersson's their best player. They should be feeding him ice time, putting him on the penalty kill, whatever. Like Pettersson is really, really good. And I will go to my grave believing this.
Yeah.
And I really hope we don't get to the point like where it's like 3 or 4 years down the road and they're like, well, we got to trade Pettersson. We got to sell him at the deadline, you know? And I mean, right now we are heading that direction, because
yeah.
What do they have coming down the pipe?
Well,
Jonathan Lekaramäki, who is not a great start to the year and is a winger, and they have no prospects at all.
So here are the line combos today. So it was Mikheyev, Horvat, Miller.
I thought Mikheyev looked good, by the way.
Mikheyev's looked fine.
He doesn't have any finish, which is exactly what Toronto fans told us. But he gets to the front of the net. He's really fast. I thought he's been good.
Yeah. Hoglander, Pettersson, Podkolzin.
Okay.
I like that line.
All right.
Like I said, doesn't seem like there's a ton of finish yet, but Podkolzin does have that shot.
Yeah.
Kuzmenko, Amon, Garland.
Amon looks good, but he doesn't look
that good. And then Pearson, Lazar, Joshua.
Sure. Whatever.
So Besser wasn't in practice. He said it was a maintenance day.
Yeah.
Pearson's where he belongs on the fourth line.
Yeah. Although he did have a nice pass on the one goal last night.
Yeah. No, that was fine. I think 5-on-5, he's been invisible.
Hasn't Rutherford traded Pearson like
twice?
He's traded him twice, right?
Yeah.
So we're overdue. I think what we should do right now maybe is predict the first Canuck player to get traded this season, because it's going to happen, right? Pearson seems like the obvious choice. But I don't know. I think we might be surprised. I think there might be a big Bo Horvat trade coming down the pipe.
And why would Horvat want to stay?
Oh, that's the other thing, right? And I don't blame him at all. You know, he's put in his time with a dog shit team year after year, experienced very little playoff success, and just gets. I mean, I feel for the guy, right? He's been good. He's been scoring a lot this year. Like I think he's been decent this year. He started off the first two games not great, but he's been pretty good. But I really think they need to trade him, because the alternatives are letting him walk for nothing or re-signing him for like 8 years, which Bo.
You can't do that.
We can't do that after the Miller thing. Maybe if they trade Miller, then you can re-sign Horvat, but it can't be both. Not this team, not this core. This core is toxic.
So back to the lines and the baseless somewhat based.
Yeah.
My based speculation. Here's Boudreaux on Hoglander, Pettersson, and Podkolzin. They're very good friends. They like working together. And the thing with Hoagie is he's got great speed and he's a great passer, blah, blah, blah. They like working. So does that imply that other people don't like working together? Because it seems completely fucking insane to me that you haven't tried Miller and Pettersson on the same line.
I think you could read into that a little bit, probably. There might be something there.
So for anyone that doesn't know, I play rugby and I've played it for a while, and you're playing with a lot of guys, right? So you're never going to like everybody, but you can always put that beside you on the field. But when things are going really bad, if there's someone whose guts you hate on the team, you better believe you're fucking arguing with them at practice and like screaming at them on the field and shit.
So I think a lot of these things are cured by winning. But yeah, like if someone that I dislike personally scores in a game that like I passed to them or whatever, I'm still going to be fucking thrilled. It's not going to matter. And these guys are getting paid a shitload of money to do that professionally. Yeah. So I think the idea that two conflicting personalities or whatever couldn't play on the same line together is like fucking absurd.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, there's, you can speculate, you can, what it really comes down to is that I just don't think this core has it. I don't know that they ever will. And I think you have to start making tough decisions now. And what it really does all come down to, the root of all the problems, I think is ownership. I don't think they're never going to rebuild properly with Aquilini in charge, unfortunately, as sad as it is. And that's why we're just looking at like another decade in the wilderness, unless they somehow get lucky in the draft lottery, which
so
it's the Canucks.
Remember last year, right? When they were losing like horrendously and they lost to, was it like Colorado or Vegas at home?
Yeah.
Like 7-1 or something early on. There were rumors coming out that the rest of the Aquilinis were pissed at Francesco because they were making the family name look bad. So maybe if there's enough like hate directed towards ownership, the rest of the family will be like, that's it, we're taking over. And maybe they'd be open to a proper rebuild.
Yeah. Hey, this guy's making the rest of us slumlords look like shit.
Yeah. We should have listened to Trevor Linden.
There is a bit of hope there that maybe he is like forced to step aside or something. Because I don't think it's realistic to expect him to actually ever sell the team, but I think fans can't sell the team at games. They can get a billboard that says sell the team. They can get the banner behind the plane. They can get it trending on Twitter, like whatever. You can make your voices heard, and I think that's unfortunately like all you can do as a fan.
Maybe if we start a Patreon, that could be a Patreon goal.
That's not a bad idea.
We will buy a billboard.
Yeah. You know what I would love to do is, you know how sometimes like the Province or like other newspapers will do like a fake front page that like wraps around the actual front page?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like a fake news story that didn't actually happen. Doing that where it's like Aquilini sells the team, Canucks fans rejoice or whatever, and it like looks like a real thing, like that would get people talking. So
that'd be good.
Yeah, maybe that's a goal. I would love to do some Patreon episodes.
We,
so maybe
we gotta start doing grassroots organizing to make the Canucks better. It's like when I was 8 years old at home thinking, what can I do to help Pavel Bure be better? I just want to contribute.
God.
I'm gonna join the fan club.
Well, we'll see. I guess, you know, this has been a good second episode. I feel like we'll see what episode 3 is like. Maybe they'll win their next 3 games by the time we record next, you know?
Yeah. And then we'll say they're middling, they're never going to get better.
But huge improvement on what's happening now. So
yeah, it would be nice to like talk about some more minutia in the games and like upcoming matchups instead of this is so painful, it's going to be continuing to be painful until I'm 40 years old at least.
That would be nice. Maybe one day. So my prediction for this upcoming week is I do think the Canucks will squeak out a win against Carolina, because that would be the most Canucks thing possible. But I also thought they were going to beat Buffalo yesterday. So what the fuck do I know?
Let's look at the schedule real quick here, because they have Carolina and then
Seattle.
They have Seattle on Thursday.
On the road, then, I believe.
Yeah, and then Penguins on Friday.
And the Penguins look really good.
Yeah. And that is at home, but it is after playing the previous night in Seattle, so it's kind of...
I mean... Man,
I see them maybe beating Seattle. Seattle's looked okay, though. I think Carolina's going to beat them tomorrow. Carolina's looked very, very good.
Carolina's
a really
good team.
They blew it against Calgary, but Calgary also looks very good.
It's entirely realistic that they are still winless by the time we record next, which for the sake of the podcast, let's hope that's the case.
I want it to be that way for the sake of something fucking happening.
Yes.
Because ever since Rutherford and Alvin took over, I've been... Like, trade deadline. I was so excited. Like,
oh,
nothing.
Yeah.
All right, the draft's coming up. They got to do something at the draft. Okay, nothing happened at the draft, but it was not July 1st. It was like July 13th. Free agency's opening. This is where something big's going to happen. and nothing really big happened. And so we're just at the same spot that we were last year, and everything sucks.
It really does. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Oh, no.